Call the regular session to order at
6:28 p.m.
We have respect and acknowledgement of declaration in the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation. We wish to acknowledge that the land in which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. Honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years. We pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. Roll call.
Councillor Morley Haskam.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Debbie Zula.
Councillor Mike Heckenan.
Deputy Clerk Carly Brighton.
Mayor David Moore. And any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none, move on to delegations and presentations. We have 11.1, Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee, Pollinator Patches, and we had Sue Poff to speak to those.
Good evening, Mayor Moore and councillors. First of all, I thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about the Pollinator Patch project with the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee. I'm working on the committee as a subject expert and that has some experience in gardening. I have my own garden business and have a background in agriculture as well. So I'm just doing an overview with you tonight about what we've decided and where we're at on the project. If you have any questions at the end, I'm happy to answer those as well. So we've chosen some native, non-invasive, and non-toxic plants for the patches as follows. Black-eyed Susan, bee balm, aster, Joe pie weed, butterfly weed, and purple coneflower. We're starting with just a few plants to get us started. As from there, we can develop and grow the gardens larger as we see fit. The areas that I've picked out and submitted to the office are the Lakeside Drive Boat Launch, the Herdville Road Fire Station, and the Hemlock Church on the corner of Center and Herdville Roads. These were chosen primarily because of their excellent growing conditions for these types of plants. Plus, these locations have high visibility and are easily accessible locations for the community to stop by and learn more about the benefits of our pollinator patches. On that note, we plan on putting some signage up and explaining what we're doing with these gardens. Plots of land are also scattered around the community to give a better opportunity for the pollinators to access more food sources. I will also be looking at reviving the community center pollinator patch that has already been established. Many are already aware of that insects are declining due to habitat loss and use of pesticides. I won't get into the pesticides tonight, but that's another area where the Lake Stewardship Environmental Committee will be looking at teaching the members of the community as well. So our pollinator insects include bees, wasps, flies, butterflies, moths, beetles, and birds. Pollination is the act of transferring pollen from the male part of the plant to the female, which allows plants to produce seeds, fruit, and new plants. 90% of our wild plants rely on this to continue to grow and spread. So insects don't just help with the pollination, but they're also a main summer diet for many of our birds that we have, and many fish also rely on land-based insects as part of their diet, especially while they're young. So this in turn will benefit our lakes and our fish stock as well. Anyone want to guess on how many species of bees we have in Ontario?
It would be a guess, so you go ahead.
A guess, just a random guess.
50.
More than that. Anybody else?
200.
Closer.
Yep.
We have about 400 species of bees in Ontario. Sadly, two of our bees are on the endangered list, which are the rusty patch bumblebee and the gypsy cuckoo bumblebee. Our native bees are more at risk of going extinct than honeybees. I know we've all heard about the honeybees and the pesticides and the damage it's causing to them. However, honeybees are replaceable. They come from Europe. They're not native to us. Whereas our native bees, once they're gone, they're gone. There's no more replacing them. Doing a little research on this too, I wanted to see what other cities are adapting pollinator patches. And the City of Toronto has adopted this, what they call the pollinator protection strategy, where they're creating large pollinator patches throughout their city and working on educating people to the benefits of planting native species of plants. Earlier I mentioned the list of plants we'd like to plant in the MacKellar pollinator patches. I've chosen these plants for their hardiness, adaptability to various soil conditions, and their ability to grow together and assist each other with controlling of potential diseases or unwanted pests such as aphids. I've chosen plants that will bloom throughout the summer and into the fall. Designing and planting native gardens has been a specialty of mine in my business over the years. With that said, I'm also volunteering my services to oversee the creation and planting of these gardens, plus the regular maintenance throughout the year. The beds will be dug out, new soil, compost, and manure added. Then potted plants will be added in strategic places throughout the new beds. The edge of the garden beds will not have a border installed, but will be edged to reduce any additional work by the property maintenance crews while mowing. In other words, they'll be able to put one tire of the mower over the garden bed and just continue on. No need to bring out their weed whacker and do any additional work. So it's important to me to make sure it's low maintenance for other people as well. Okay, if you have any other questions at this time for me, I can go into more detail on the plants if you want to know more about them.
And just one question on the plants.
Yes.
Do those grow naturally in the area as well?
They do. So they're native to Ontario, and specifically our area. So plants grow in certain zones. So we're zone 3-4, and these plants thrive in this area as well.
Okay, so I guess the question is, in these particular areas, are these plants growing presently?
Not in these particular areas, no. It's mostly just grass from what I've seen in the areas. The three locations, now I understand the Hemlock Church, there's construction going on. So that was a place I originally had chosen, but understand we need to delay that until the construction's done. So we're looking at doing a 7-foot by 7-foot patch to start with. So we'll keep it small, easily maintained. And again, I'm volunteering my services, so I'll be going out and working on those gardens every month.
The maintenance is certainly a concern. I know when we developed Minerva Park, we had people come in and actually put in some plants for us and bushes. But there was the maintenance, and we've talked as well about up along 124 in front of what used to be the garage, maybe a future pizza place. I don't know what's happening there.
Yeah.
But the same thing. I mean, we get enough people to actually put the plants in, but then it's a maintenance for years to come. So you're volunteering.
Yes.
Your maintenance.
Yes, maintenance, because I go out and I do everybody else's gardens. That's, you know, stopping by there instead of my 7th area will take me less than an hour if I do it every month.
You mentioned signs as well. What are we looking at there?
So what we're looking at, not large signs, but just a signage there to explain about pollinators, why we're doing the patches, and then also to describe the plants there. So our hopes is, too, that people will stop by and look at them, gather seeds if they want to take back to their own gardens. These plants will all just spread naturally on their own, but the seeds will help them spread a little bit more. And they're also used a lot in what's considered to be English garden beds, which I don't know if you're familiar with the term English garden bed, but those are the beds that are just thick. They're just full of plants. Those type of gardens are choke out weeds, like natural weeds and stuff like that. And I'm kind of partial to those kind of garden beds. As a gardener, I was busy doing everybody else's gardens, so I installed English gardens in my own property, and I would only weed them 3 times a year. So that's the idea of these plants going in here, so as they continue to grow and spread, there'll be less maintenance required of them.
Okay, other questions from council? Councilor Kaikkonen?
So the So one of the things in the resolution was that staff would have an opportunity to view the locations of these.
Yes.
So did you receive an answer as soon as you came in, like you showed the locations, or was there, did you have to wait to receive a response? What I'm getting at is I don't believe our director of operations, and when we did pass that resolution, it was mainly that the director of operations be consulted with the locations of these pollinator patches, because he knows the lay of the land and he knows what, you know, the staff are doing to maintain these locations.
I haven't heard anything back. I did drop off the land plots with the general outlined area in red to Ina. She said they look good, but I never heard anything back, and I'm not sure if that would go directly to Jennifer as she oversees the project. So myself, I haven't heard anything back whether or not it's been approved by him.
Right. So, and the other thing, there's a couple of points. We always have to sort of use critical thinking and determine, you know, why are we doing this and, you know, what's the purpose and what are the benefits. And a lot of McKellar Township is a natural environment that has the feed sources available for pollinators, whereas reviewing pollinator patches and butterfly gardens, it seems to have originated as a urban project to increase pollinator patches for urban centers. So then the thought came to mind that, and because these are in such visible locations, that really, I think, in my opinion, there needs to be sort of an emphasis on the landscape aspect of these, so that, you know, they enhance these very visible locations due to the fact that there really isn't a shortage of natural food sources for pollinators and overwintering areas for pollinators in McKellar Township. So those are just a couple of points that came to mind for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you there. And that's why I chose the locations that they're in for the visibility, so that people can come and learn as well and understand more about the benefits of our pollinators. I definitely agree with you there.
So they're going to enhance the visual aspect.
Visual, exactly, too, because I drive past a lot of these locations. I actually birdwatch quite a bit at the fire station there, and there's nothing beautifying the area. There's a whole section of it that's kind of looks like it's been plowed down. The trees are all down. The area where I chose there is off to the side. It's just a grassy area, so putting in some continuous blooms in there will make it look a lot prettier as well. Same with Hemlock Church. And then the lakeside boat launch there as well. It's just a big grassy field going down. So it'll just beautify our township a little more as well.
I think there still needs to be a final sort of a site approval by the Public Works Director of Operations. At this point in time, I don't believe he's seen any of these locations, and he would have a good idea of if that's an appropriate location.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Debbie. Councilor Zulak.
So, Susan, the one at Herdville, mm-hmm. The Hemlock Church,
yes.
Why wouldn't you put it back here? Why over here?
It's more visible. I spend a lot of time birdwatching there, too. it's more visible from the corners there. Again, my idea was, it makes sense to beautify the area as well, not just hide the garden in the back where people aren't going to see it. That was kind of the reason why I wanted there. There's a sign there as well for the church, and that's why I kind of said it's a generalized area. I mean, they can be moved around. This was just an idea from myself. There's a sign there that we can even build it in and around and under the sign to kind of enhance the sign of the church as well. So we're very flexible on the locations and in there. And like Councilor Kekkonen said, Director of Operations, if he suggests, no, this isn't a good spot, we can certainly move it around.
So, like the one they have out here, it's just a pile of weeds.
Yes.
So that's not what that's going to be.
It's not going to be that.
Because
no.
You can't even tell where that is. It's just a pile of weeds.
Yes, and that's because it hasn't been cared for So I'll be looking at that in the spring, and I'll be revamping that one as well.
Because that's my concern. I don't want to have a, clump or weeds or...
I wish I should have brought
in the middle
pictures
of the cut grass.
Yeah. I wish
like,
I brought...
So why didn't somebody take them over and cut that?
Yeah, I agree with you. It doesn't look pretty at all, and it's not something that we want to portray in our patches.
Now, two of them aren't populated areas, but I'm wondering on Lakeside. Is there any concern there, do you think, with the people nearby? But,
no, actually, a lot of the residents, I live on Lakeside, a lot of the residents are actually quite thrilled with the idea. I believe across the street there's a parking area and there's a field there that used to get mowed, but doesn't anymore, thankfully. So we've got a lot of hummingbirds and different birds and bees and stuff in there. And this is just, again, to amplify it, get them closer to the shore as well in that area.
Okay, other questions?
I guess I'd just make a comment. Sue did touch on it that you're going to hold off on the one at Hemlock Church because of the construction.
Correct.
So that would maybe put in then the year after.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I think the construction, they depending on when they do it, but it may be even in the fall.
Yes.
Kind of thing. And then it'd be nice to see the other ones, how they look, and then that might help us determine, because that one will be really visible. And then I'm not a big fan of that sign that's there either. It just looks too commercial kind of thing. Whether we could look at what we could do with that. And like you say, maybe the sign and the garden could complement each other.
Yes.
So, okay, we'll look at that as a project the year after.
I guess I have a question as well, too. You've touched on the gardens at Minerva Park there. So no one at this point takes care of them?
No.
I would adopt that then. If council agrees, if I'm taking care of the other ones, I will go and look after those as well.
And just to get it clear, if we expand and put in other areas, you're going to look after those too. I won't ask too much. Well, that's great to hear. Yes. We have a question from the audience here.
Yeah, I've just got a small question.
Just for the, again, for the recording, if you can give your name.
My name's Paul LeBlanc. We live at 17 Charles Avenue in McKellar.
Thank you.
The question I've got, the native plants that you're talking about, do they naturally spread and grow? Or is it going to be something that's going to be, this is the garden, that's where it's going to stay? Because I know some plants, and my wife's Dutch, I'll let her look after that thing, but I know some plants have they double in area, they keep growing, growing, growing. Is that, like, these plants, what type are they?
Okay, so a lot of the plants that I've chosen are, they will reseed and spread that way.
Okay.
Their base plant will grow and expand and fill in the garden bed, but while I'm maintaining it, it won't go past the garden bed.
I
so
see.
They're not invasive, which means that they're not going to send out little suckers and carry on and pop up through the grass in different areas.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that's why I chose these ones. And I also chose them as non-toxic because I do recall, like some farmers, there were some plants that we were looking at as well, such as we have common milkweed and swamp milkweed here. We're not going to include those because I know some farmers and their livestock are concerned about that because they are a little more airborne seeds with those plants, so they will float and carry on, so we don't want any of those plants in the gardens as well. Another one is what we see along a lot of our ditches is the, wild lupin, sorry. Wild lupins, we see that in our ditches, but they're also very toxic as well. So we're not going to include those in our gardens. So we want to make sure every plant that we chose is not toxic to people or animals.
Okay, thanks very much for all that you do and going to do.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate that. So I guess, as Councillor Kekkonen had said, that would be your next step to somehow meet with our Director of Operations?
Yes, I'll make sure I do that then.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you. I have 11.2, Westbury Sound District Museum, 2023 funding request follow-up. Get the slideshow, good.
Mayor Miller, councilors, thank you so much for your time and consideration. The Westbury Sound District Museum was started by a group of citizens who believed that the Westbury Sound District needed a place to house its history, to preserve and share it with future generations. Founded in 1983, the museum was originally housed in the Perry Sound Fire Hall. In 1993, the building on Tower Hill was finished and the museum was able to move into their purpose-built building. In 2020, the West Perry Sound District Museum updated its strategic plan to identify a new and clearer, more direct mission statement, which is to collect, preserve, and share the West Perry Sound District history. We also identified four strategic objectives. These objectives are to enhance the community access to heritage, capturing our heritage as it happens, diversifying funding sources, as well as securing current funding in order to ensure the financial security of the organization. And lastly, to protect our capital investments, which is namely our building. Since identifying these objectives, we have been working hard to achieve these outcomes. Community access is more than just our exhibitions. As it is reflected in this highlight slide, you can see we do a lot of online programming, in-person programming, lecture series, as well as just general research. We allow researchers to come in and view primary documents. We house that archive. So access to heritage is about the museum's programming ability to make our resources available to the communities we serve. We are continuing to serve our communities in 2023 with these exhibitions and ongoing projects. I'd like to highlight that we have digitized 5 years of the Perry Sound North Stars and are working on creating a space in our building for researchers to come in and browse our digital holdings. None of these projects would be possible without our staff and volunteers. Staff and volunteers are responsible for the work on any of the programs that the museum offers, be it virtual, exhibitions, research, outreach, even recruiting new volunteers. This is reflected in our expenses. As you can see, our payroll is approximately 50% of our anticipated expenses, and I want to note that our operating budget, the expenses, is pretty no-frills. It's pretty basic. It is what is required to operate the museum. Our income budget, however, is a little bit more hopeful. Here's reflected monies or funding that we are going to be going after in the new year. None of it is secured, or most of it is not secured. The idea is, if we achieve these goals, we will invest anything that's over and above our operating budget into our capital investment, or our capital building, or the building, investing it through upgrades or repairs. So as such, the museum is respectfully requesting that McKellar contribute to the West Perry Sound District Museum, both by appointing a representative to our board of directors, as well as financially. Your financial contribution will be an investment into the preservation of McKellar's heritage, programming and tourism opportunities provided by having a museum that is open year-round will greatly enhance your community. Having a representative on our board will allow you to ensure the money you invest is spent wisely and that the value of the museum is related to your council. And I'd like to conclude this presentation by introducing you to our current board and staff members. We have a few new board of directors, and we really hope we'd be able to welcome a representative from McKellar, as well as myself. I'm Nadine Hammond, the curator manager. Amy Sultana is our collection supervisor. We have a collections assistant who is an intern and a part-time gift shop attendant. And I welcome any questions or comments. But thank you again for your time.
Great, thank you. I guess the first question, looking at contribution requests, was there any formula to arrive at that?
No, the formula that we have used in the past is basically what municipalities have been willing to give. We have been requesting either 3% or 6% increases over the years. Last year we did request an additional $5,000 from every contributing municipality. McKellar was not one of those. We just took a look at McKellar's budget or McKellar's expenses contributions and kind of came up with something that we thought would be comparable to the other municipalities.
Okay, well, we haven't even seen our budget yet, but...
we were looking past years, more in the tax bracket.
No, that's fair enough. I'm just wondering, too, is this a one-time donation sort of thing, or could it be spread out over the year, or how do you finance it?
Most municipalities provide us with a one-time annual contribution, so we will likely we'll submit again next year. However, if you want to do it over the year, that's fine. We have a couple of municipalities that have done it semi-annually or quarterly, but most of the time it's a one-time check.
Okay. And I don't know whether you've been out to all the municipalities or whether you even have to do this. Maybe they're giving annually. I'm noticing Whitestone, for instance. Are you traveling there, or have they any suggestion that they're going to be contributing more?
Whitestone, I have yet to do a deputation to them. I will be doing so, I believe, next week. I have done all of the other municipalities. At this point, I don't think Whitestone will be contributing more.
Well, I only ask because we're quite comparable to Whitestone in many things. I'm currently looking at our assessment and our budgets. And I'm just looking at that as well, and Carling does seem quite high compared to Perry Sound. Does Carling have their own museum, or do they have anything at all?
No, Carling does not have their own museum. What they do have is in their community building, they have a little alcove where they put on exhibitions and shows. We have been actually working with them in order to put on exhibitions in that space, as well as we've been consulting with them to help get it up and running so that they can turn over, so they're planning an art show in there right now. The other municipalities that have museums, we act as a resource. I know you have your own museum, the McKellar Heritage Room. We actually have an artifact on loan. The benefit of the West Perry Sound District Museum, we're not looking to compete, we're looking to cooperate. We provide resources in terms of the Perry Sound Lowers archivals. We can loan out objects. We have a space that is environmentally controlled in order to preserve these artifacts. We also, because we have full-time staff year-round, we can be a resource. You have a question, what's the best method to do this? How would you recommend we do it? We can answer those questions, and we'd be happy to provide that service to the McKellar Heritage Room.
I know in the past you have done demonstrations or displays at the agricultural fair, I think, and and different functions that we put on as well. So you are amenable to that. You would come out and do a display.
Absolutely. We've been trying to do more outreach. Again, that does kind of relate to staffing. But is when we're able to, we're quite happy to get out to the community. We've got some great programming that just started up in the last couple of years. We have a HO scale model train. We're always looking for volunteers to come and help us run that. We have the Northern Nature Exchange, which is part of Science North. We love taking that out on the road. So any markets, we can bring that. It includes bugs, minerals, rocks, pine cones, that type of stuff. And people can come in and trade. We absolutely love taking the heritage out.
Another question, Councillor. Councillor Zulak.
Okay, so Mayor Moore had said that we haven't set our budget.
Yeah.
We haven't even looked at it. So you have us down there for $10,000. If it, by chance we decided that we would want to join in our the amount of money that we could contribute was quite a bit less, would that we still be accepted?
Yes.
Yeah, and we still have a person on the.
Yes,
also.
And if you contribute to, if you're a contributing municipality, you're welcome to put a councillor on our board,
okay,
or have any sort of representative. So absolutely yes.
Okay.
Other questions?
No.
It has come a long way. I know I was there at the beginning. The different. And the big thing, as you mentioned, the HVAC unit, I think, is so important. We don't have that here, of course, and we're not open year-round, as you know, so I think those are all pluses. And it's interesting that they're all, it seems to be an area-wide approach here that everybody's contributing somewhat anyway. So So I think Councillor Zulak's point is a good one, that once we get discussing the budget more, then we could certainly investigate whether we want to be part of all of this for the area.
Yeah, I highly recommend, even if the budget is farther out on your agenda, to consider appointing a member to our board of directors. That way you can see what it's all about. Maybe, don't want to shoot myself in the foot here, but even appoint somebody to the board so that you can really consider for 2024 whether or not this is worthwhile for you. I think having seen somebody on the day, not necessarily day-to-day operations, but regularly involved with the museum, you'll truly see the benefit that the museum can provide to McKellar communities.
So are you saying that we can have a member appointed to the board?
You are, yes, you are part of our catchment area. We serve the West Perry Sound District Museum. West Perry Sound District. I always append the museum even when I don't want to. So yes, whether that would change down the road, but we strongly encourage you to appoint somebody, because we believe in this so much that you will find the value in it. The police appoint somebody to our board of directors.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting. You can get out of here before midnight.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Chased another person out nicely at midnight there.
Yeah. Oh, she's on her way. Resolution 23-185, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the deputation from Sue Poff, member of the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? Not opposed? Carried. Resolution 23-186, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskin. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received a deputation from the Dean Hammond, manager slash curator of the West Perry Sound District Museum. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? Not opposed? Carried. On to adoption of the minutes of previous meeting. Have resolution 23-187, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby approved the minutes of the February 21st, 2023 regular meeting of Council and the minutes of the February 24th, 2023 special meeting of Council as circulated. Discussion? Councillor Keichel?
There was one thing that caught my attention when we were receiving reports. If it could include who the report was prepared by, because someone who may be just reading the minutes may not know what FD report, FD a number such and such is, prepared by Fire Chief.
Sounds good.
Okay, thank you.
And any other clarify things? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. To planning matters, the zoning bylaw amendment 15.1. I'll read the resolution and we'll open it up for discussion. Resolution 23-188, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskin. Whereas bylaw 2023-12 was deferred at the January 24th, 2023 regular meeting of Council, and whereas Council felt it was necessary for the applicant to obtain an ecological report evaluating the deer, wintering area, and fish habitat close proximity to the subject lands, and whereas the applicant retained Riverstone Environmental Solutions, Inc. to provide a scoped site evaluation, and whereas the applicant confirmed with their solicitor that the lots will merge without passing a deeming bylaw, now therefore be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby acknowledged receipt of the following, the legal verification from the applicant's solicitor via email correspondence that the lots will merge without the necessity of passing a deeming bylaw, the scope site evaluation report from Riverstone Environmental Solutions, Inc., the planning memo from J.O. Richards and Associates Limited, and the revised draft bylaw from J.O. Richards and Associates Limited to include recommendations from Riverstone Environmental Solutions, Inc.
Rebecca, do you mind just unmuting just to ensure that you can hear us and we can hear you? Mind saying something again, Rebecca? I'm just having trouble hearing you. Try again.
I think Sarah can hear me.
Okay, now we can hear you.
Okay. And I can hear you loud and clearly.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
We were just receiving the all of this information, but I'm thinking it's probably a good time, even though we don't have the bylaw in front of us at this point, to look at some of the background on what has happened, to bring us up to speed and look at, consider the bylaw later in the agenda. So I guess the question we have, and we'll put this out maybe to the, before we even discuss it, to the applicant since he's here, and all of the requirements that we had asked for previously and that you have met, and just what stage you're at there, and you think everything has been completed to your satisfaction? And,
We've done the studies. We worked with Bev that did the surveys of the property. They sent a person out from Bracebridge or Gravenhurst to attend to the property, albeit a lot of snow. And they did their review of the trees, and they came out with a report, I believe, about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, in the summary, basically saying that, you know, it both fish and deer, the fish being the added one, it passed its requirements that the township would need. I'm just here to say hi. And if there's any questions, please ask me, and be happy to discuss it. I'm here to find a happy resolution, because I know there's a couple of things that came in earlier this morning that weren't part of the requests that were made months ago that were disappointing, and everybody has a position to say what they want, but we fulfilled all the duties that were requested of us.
Okay, good. Thank you. I'll turn it over to the planner maybe with some comments and what they have seen so far, and whether they feel that the conditions have been met, all the requests of the township.
If I may, we have included the recommendations of the scoped EIS report within the zoning bylaw amendment, the draft of the ZDA, where they are appropriate, and identified other measures within the body of the planning report that the applicant should consider, and have included all of those recommendations within both the planning report and the draft of the zoning bylaw amendment.
Just want a clarification because, again, of the correspondence that we've received, those recommendations you put in there, now it's not a consent agreement as such, so I guess what you're putting in the bylaw, are those enforceable? What comes out of the Riverstone report, for instance?
So there are a number of recommendations within the EIS report with regard to setbacks from the shoreline that can be implemented within the zoning bylaw amendment itself, but there are a number of recommendations that pertain to revegetation of the shoreline buffer that cannot be included within that zoning bylaw amendment. And so this is an area where previously that could be addressed at the site plan stage, but that is no longer available as a planning tool. And so there is some discussion about whether or not we can use a consent agreement, but that was not requested or included in the decision of the planning board's report with respect to the consent application. So it would be a matter of returning back to the planning board, asking them to revise their conditions and include a condition for a consent agreement. If council so chooses to pursue that route. And perhaps, Sarah, you could speak more to that.
Yes, thank you, Rebecca. So my name is Sarah Vero, and I was asked by our colleague, Dave Wellwood, to attend tonight's meeting with Rebecca. And I'm familiar with the file as well. So as Rebecca noted, now the township and municipalities throughout Ontario do not have a site plan control agreement mechanism anymore to implement some of these measures coming out of the EIS that go beyond the typical zoning requirements. And that is where we would see that typically come to play in that site plan agreement. Where we're falling down a little bit is that typically, so this would be a matter to go back to the planning board and request a consent agreement. I know this will add a bit of time to the process, but that's where we've kind of landed at in terms of implementing those additional measures with respect to revegetation on the site.
So without reference to the revegetation, I'm just looking at the various things that are in the bylaw. The setback of 30 meters, for instance, from the high water mark, those are enforceable again without a consent agreement?
Yes, those are enforceable as part of the zoning bylaw amendment without any sort of consent agreement.
Are there questions from council? I guess the other concerns we had, since again we've received correspondence on it, the lot area and the lot frontage. The frontage in particular, previous bylaws were brought forward and it talked about a minimum of 39 meters, and this one says a minimum of 77.5 meters. And I guess the question council has, which figure is accurate and what would we be going by? Because there's some concern expressed that if the 77.5 meters is in there and it can't be obtained, if there isn't that distance, then the whole application will fall apart. So I guess the previous one talked about parts 1 and 4 as having minimum, I think it was 39, and this one talks about a minimum of 77.5. So which one is accurate? And we have the applicant here, too. He probably knows the property and the distance for the frontage. But
so those figures that we referenced in the staff report, the frontage of 77.5 meters, was obtained from the application, which included a sketch of the proposed severance. And in a table just below the drawing, the proposed lot area and lot frontage were identified on that sketch. And so that's where those figures have come from. So perhaps it could be beneficial if the applicant could clarify which are the correct figures, whether those figures that were identified within the severance sketch are the accurate values, or if that sketch was incorrect.
Yeah, just to add on that, because after receiving the comment from Mr. Davidson, we looked into it on our end a little bit further, and it does look like there might be a discrepancy there in terms of the parts in that plan 42 are 17,321. It looks like there might be some additional lands included with that severance sketch that are actually part of the lot to the southwest. So I think, yeah, if we want to defer to the applicant on that, and that can be clarified through the bylaw tonight.
Okay, the applicant's here. I don't know whether they want to speak to that.
Fortunately, I'm not an engineer or an architect, but back about, we bought these properties in something 23 years ago, okay, and we were given four lots on this point, and they were deemed a subdivision property. On these four properties, which we bought, we had a cottage on one, a deck on another, a septic system on a third. So we sat down with, you know, you can't operate like that. That what was done in 1962 and 1970 was not reasonable and common sense-y. So we basically worked with Macaulay out of Perry Sound, and we said, look, we have four lots. We got to clean this up into three usable lots so that each property stands on its own 2 feet with its own septic, its own cottage, its own driveway or home, which we did. And that's where the severances changed from 1962 to today, where that water frontage is a little bit bigger, where it was a little bit smaller before. Okay? So what we did is we took a chunk of the property on the west, the northwest, which is the largest of the property, and gave some lands to that lot so that we could get the approval from the township, City of McKellar, Township of McKellar, to move it from a four-lot property into a three-lot property. The waterfronts cannot be expanded, not unless we sell some of the lands on our west side of our property to that shoreline, which I guess physically could be done. But the properties behind us are owned by the trust association, the Reggie would know.
Longhorn Corporation.
Yeah, Longhorn Corporation. So everything behind all these properties on Charles Avenue, everything behind it's owned by Longhorn. So you can't expand it or reduce it or whatever. That's what we were given and that's what we were dealing with. So the idea here was if when we bought these three properties, it's almost like a deja vu meeting, 15, 18 years later, we're dealing with the same set of circumstances. So we worked with the Magnetowan Authority with regards to the septic system with the waterfront lot, and they said basically you got three choices. One, you either have to blast and dig a $50,000, $75,000 hole, so your septic system is at two stories high, or do a septic system that is two stories high, or get some of the property that's adjoining. So the properties adjoining were won in a poker game, and this guy he came up once in the whole time that we were there. He visited once, and he won it for $5,000. And his taxes, even to this today, and Carla will attest to it, our taxes for these three lots is $170, okay? So we said, okay, like, what do you want for it? And he said, well, we're going to post it, and we won the bid to buy the properties. So we bought these three properties with the intention to add value to the shoreline property, so the septic system has a natural free-flowing decline into a proper septic system, basically would be the first choice that the Magnetowan Authority would choose. That's the reason why that chunk of property is being added to that shoreline property. The other 2.5 lots should be deemed as one. So the architect, the designer said, basically, you're boiling down to, you know, in my world, you have three or four choices. One, you bought a piece of property and it just sits the way it is and you pay your $150 taxes every year on a assumed city street now, because we've now assumed that with the four cottagers on Charles Avenue, we've increased our taxes over the next 20 years or 10 years, depending on how that homeowner went, to make it an assumed road. So there's value to this assumed road with these properties here now. So we said, okay, so we want to buy these three lots and give value to the shoreline property. So he said, you've got one choice. Leave it the way it is. Don't do anything. go to the keg once a year, give them $175 taxes, and leave it the way it is. That's kind of like a non-productive choice. The second is adding a piece of the property to the shoreline property, and being able to build and develop that property along with these 2.5 other lots. I will say that it is a subdivision lot, and in the wisdom of 1962, when these properties were developed, they were deemed waterfront. These are not waterfront lots. These are basically high and dry on the ground on the northwest side of Charles Avenue. The waterfront properties are on the other side of Charles Avenue. So the whole purpose here is, how do I add value to these existing properties, keeping what the Magneto wants, a septic authority wants basically to see, a proper septic system for that waterfront property, and three, add a value tax base to the township to make sure that our road stays the way it is in the last 2 years with snow removal, ambulance care, and everything else. And if anybody's been down the end of Charles Avenue, you can see the house that we have there. We've added value to that community. And the last option that the architect gave us, he said, well, leave, don't do anything. Let the whole thing get squashed. You have a building lot with that small waterfront on it, and hopefully in the next 5 years they come up with a better idea for septic systems that's not that great right now, and you have a great building lot. The three lots that are adjoining, 15% built the townhouse. They're building lots. Do it the way that's a proper way of looking at it. And from my standpoint, I would have neighbors that would probably hate me. I don't think, like, can we develop it? Sure we can. We can plunk three townhouse-type properties on that north, on each one of those three lots, add a tax base, but that means every time I go down Charles Avenue, I'm going to have to look at three new homes. And that would just drive me nuts. I don't think that would be a great value added to our community. But I have three properties that I can develop. So that's the last resort choice to do. So that's the reason why we're here today. We're trying to find a resolution where we can say, look, we have a building lot. We got it cleaned up 15, 18 years ago because it was a mess then. And we're faced with the last mess on Charles Avenue with these three, what I call poker lots. And that's why I'm here tonight, to make sure that you guys ain't got any questions, ask me. If I don't know, I don't know. I've been talking to Carly. She's my best friend in McKellar in the last year. So,
we'll hold off on the planner just for a minute. We have members of the public, too, and you can give your name, please.
Reg Ware. I'd just like to speak to the frontage that you were discussing. And I think I can clear it up pretty easy. All you have to do is look at plan 42R173.21. And I don't know whether Carly has a copy of that with her or not, but it shows you there's only 39 meters of frontage there. For to give Paul a bylaw with 77.5 meters on it, you're not doing him any favors. You're giving him a bylaw that's not going to be
any good. It's not workable. It's not going to happen. I can't go into deer land. Okay? So it's basically...
So all you have to do is look at that plan. That's the plan that Paul was talking about that was done for to combine the lots for him to build his cottage on.
Yeah, and to clean up the mess.
And parts having 1 and 4 are the parts that are being added to right now, and they have 39 meters of frontage.
So it says minimum 39 meters, so if that were to be put in there, it's still, that would all be acceptable? Because that's what it was
that's
before.
That's what it is now? Yeah, that's it.
We're not asking for a change on waterfront.
Right.
We're just asking basically to add a dead piece of property so we can have a proper septic system and add value to the shoreline property. That's the number one goal. What happens with the other 2.5 lots, that's for future discussion, but that should be cleaned up as a building lot and done like that so we don't have to come back here in 5 or 10 years.
Okay, put it back to the planner, whether that would be acceptable. Now, that's the frontage. I'm wondering about the actual area itself. Is that a concern, too? Is that the correct...
I didn't know there was an issue with the area.
I don't know. It says 0.370 hectare. And I think.
No, there wasn't. It was that property 15, 17 years ago was deemed as a building property with that water frontage. And what I had to do is I had to give lands to the municipality for the proper turnaround circle, which is now a boulder and a bunch of trees, okay? But I had to give properties on my shoreline of the southeast corner, okay? We had to give properties to the municipality to move the circle down so that that would become a proper building lot. Because if you look at the proper, you look at from 1962, the circle of the roundabout went from the top and it went down to the bottom. It ate up. We had to give those properties to the municipality, and we changed it all and got the surveys done and did that.
If you would like to refer to the minimum lot frontage and minimum lot area requirements of the special provision 16.39 zone that the benefiting parcel was previously zoned as, and include those minimum lot frontage and minimum lot area, then we can ensure that regardless of what the frontage is, it can be at least that 39 meters. I think that would be reasonable.
And while we have you here too, the suggestion that rather than coming up with a new special provision number, maybe it's too late at this point. Anyway, you mentioned 16.39. Could that have been amended to look at what's happening now, rather than coming up with new ones?
In my understanding, section 16.39 refers not only to these lands, but other lands in question as well. And so our intention in creating a separate special provision zone was to capture the recommendations of the scoped EIS, and so as not to apply those recommendations to all those other lands included in special provision 16.39.
Okay, makes sense. Reg?
So the 16.75 that is suggested, that works, but it should, on the mapping end in the bylaw, it should make reference to special provision 16.39 being changed from 16.939 and waterfront 2 to 16.75. The map has no reference to any of that right now.
So for the paper trail at the sea?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
In the future, somebody might start applying 16.39 to that property again. Which is what? 16. The special provision that joined the lots that let you build on them.
Okay.
So is that clear again to the planner what Reg is suggesting on the mapping to indicate both numbers?
Just to clarify, it's a little bit tricky to hear you, but from what I understand, the Schedule A, you would like it to show the rezoning from the two zones, the waterfront 2 zone and the special provision 16.39 to this new special provision zone. Is that correct?
16.75.
That's correct, Rebecca.
I can certainly update that mapping to show that.
Okay, any other questions from the public, council? We've come a long way. Reg?
I think from the review I did on it, I maybe just have one question for Paul.
Yes.
I didn't bother trying to scale it to C, but that 30-meter setback doesn't, the Riverstone report doesn't permit a septic in that area.
Correct. So the septic system would be going basically towards the new lots.
And so that new lot, that piece that you're putting on, that there going to be enough room there for septic and buildings and everything? Everything's
no,
got to be 30 meters back.
Right. So basically the idea was with the designer is that basically the house is going to sit on the hillside of the property, which is going to give you your waterfront backage, right?
30 meters,
right, which is 50 feet. 56, how many feet is that?
100 feet.
Yeah, it's doable, but it's tight because now you're going to get closer to the cul-de-sac, right, the circle, and where are you going to park a car, right? I mean, you know what? That's part of the problem when the subdivisions were done. If you go down the last house next to our property, the garage is on the township property line. Okay? So, like, if you really wanted to go by the rule book, there's going to be a lot of unhappy Charles Avenue people because the property, they built a garage basically on a on the city property. So, I don't have it